back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are into the summer months. I have put on my Fadley shirt. I can't wait to get back for those delicious crab cakes. I got to get over and get me a little rockfish for my summer grill here before the crab cake tour begins. It began at Fadley's with our friends Bill and Nancy and the Damie, everyone there. We hope you get over to Lexington Market, continue to support them, our friends at State Fair, as well over in Catonsville, where they had a big hootenanny for the 4th of July. Don Moeller is here. Jeff Moeller, as well, was with you from Moeller and Gary Realty, out selling real estate and doing all that. What a weekend in Catonsville, Don.
There was a lot going on in Catonsville. One of the 75th annual parade, biggest fireworks ever in Catonsville. So it was a big day. People had fun, and boy, isn't it fun today to welcome one of our favorite visitors to Baltimore Positive, the Reverend Al Hathaway Union Baptist Church. Because Rev, I say, you are a true believer. You believe that Baltimore's future is bright and is positive.
Yes I do.
Well, Rev, why is that, Rev? Give me some positivity here to start us off here. We've talked so much about pandemic and the challenges we've had. What has you feeling optimistic here in July of 2021?
You know, one of the things that has happened is that, I grew up in Baltimore. And there's something about the resiliency of our spirit that affirms when you actually talk to people in communities. Yes, there is a concern about violence. They're concerned about crime. They're concerned about political leadership. But when you really ask them a question about, will you flee or will you fight? They are willing to fight for the best for their city. So I found a unique spirit in our city of saying, we're going to stay here. We're going to work. We're going to make certain we do all we can to make Baltimore a better city.
Well, I guess for, you know, all of us in who live here and walking through the streets, I live here, I enjoy it here, and then I go out and I get the reputation of here from people who haven't been here lately. You know, I was up in Bel Air last week with the Harford County Executive, Barry Glassman, and I know he's been here. He was in Dundalk over the weekend, but I talked to people up there. We haven't been back. We haven't been to the city a year and a half. Well, then what? But you're judging it based on what? The TV, the news, you know, the bad things that happened here last weekend. I walk through the city every day. I eat good things. I see good things. I meet nice people. I was in New York last week. I saw bad things there too, right? And good things there. But for the reputation of the city, for those of us who are living here and being here every day, I still love it here. I still see many, many awesome things that I do on a daily basis here.
Let me give you an example. I was at my church the other day. A lady called up. She had just lost her nephew, and she was extremely upset with the church, with myself, with, you know, just blaming everybody about what had actually happened to her relative. And then when I began to probe her and began to find out, I found that there was just a general sense of frustration, that these things are overwhelming, that we're not able to do anything. And then I reminded her that you did call the church. You did call a place that even as you were expressing yourself, there was an ear here to listen. And I think that's one of the things that I found a kind of empathy that's in our city that I think is going to bode well for us as we go in the future.
Well, Rev, it's like we had mental telepathy. You mentioned the woman calling your church about her nephew who was killed and how she ranted and raved, and you tweeted about it.
Yes.
And I had copied that tweet in preparation for today's show because that tweet moved me, and it moved me on several levels. And it was the way you ended that tweet that truly got my attention. You said that woman's call was a wake-up call that we need a true people's plan.
That's correct.
A true people's plan. According to Reverend Al Hathaway, what's a true people's plan look like, sound like, feel like?
Well, first of all, you got to realize if we have a city of a little bit less than 600,000 people, clearly if we're going to move our city, we're going to need 120,000 people involved. I mean, that's the nature of a revolution. you got 20% of the population involved. So I think the work that we need to do is to make certain that we engage that numeric number of people. If we do that, we're at a tipping point, and I believe we can change the nature and the course of the direction of our city.
Well, but let's pick up on that, Reb. We're going to get to the exciting project related to Thurgood Marshall, I promise. But since we've started in this area, you talk about the 120,000 people. You talk about the People's Plan. Yes. I want to give you a moment to update people on what I think's the most I don't think it's an exaggeration. I think it's the most significant advocacy effort I've ever seen someone put together in my lifetime, and that is Act Now Baltimore. Yeah. Last time we spoke to you, you had gone past the 100,000 mark, which just doesn't even compute that someone could put together a group pushing for positive change that now has over 100,000 members. So I'm assuming they're part of the People's Plan.
Yes,
give us an update on Act Now Baltimore.
Let me give you an update. So on next Wednesday, July the 14th, we're going to basically announce the formation of what we're calling the People's Plan. And this comes from extensive conversations. We've talked to gang leaders. We've talked to former kingpins. We've talked to police, high-level executives, police officers, business leaders, community people, young, old. And we're going to assemble together right in front of City Hall on July the 14th, and we're going to announce that we are going to create the People's Plan. You've got the police plan. You've got the political plan. There's a need for People Plan. Now, what does a People Plan mean? People Plan means fundamentally that we are the citizens, we are the residents of this community, have to be involved and engaged at decision-making levels. There's a lot of policy that happens that has impact in the community without any input. I mean, for example, you have just the relaxation of certain crimes that are nuisance crimes in neighborhoods. Now, a person might say, hey, that burns up a lot of our activity, that's minor, but it's major in a community when you have people walking up and down the streets creating havoc in the neighborhoods that you live when they themselves don't live there.
Public urination may seem like a minor thing to someone who's trying to prosecute it, right? But if it's on your doorstep, it doesn't feel minor, right?
No, it's not minor at all. It's a major impact on one's quality of life. So part of what we're going to do with the People's Plan, we're going to work together, and this I'm going to need the prayers. We're going to try to create a truce between some of the gangs around them curtailing and minimizing some of the activities that's leading to some of the violence. The other part is that we're going to do is that we're going to use the expertise of very knowledgeable police officers to help this police commissioner who is not from this city, who's a good guy, but just does not have the relational capital to make things happen in the neighborhoods and communities. So we're going to leverage our relational capital to make things happen in local communities. And then the third thing that I think is very important is that you have to have what you call places of refuge. Where do you come to have conversations when you feel, people call it mediation, people call it intervention, but you've got to have places where people can come where they can say, hey, this has gotten to the boiling point, I'm about to bust, hey, I need to talk to someone. So we're going to create those kinds of places in the local communities.
Reverend Al Hathaway joining us here, as always, and you know, Rev, I have kid you now. It's been almost 3 years since we got together over at Jennings, I think, is where we met under the Paradise sign. And I said, you know, you're the guy they put on the news for 15 seconds after there's been a tragedy to try to make sense of it. And having gotten to know you better and giving you more oxygen and all of this, I certainly hope that those people that reach to you will be reaching to you next week in the media and otherwise to try to spread this, dare I say, gospel of what you're trying to put forth here. I would not push back, but also offer, isn't this what we vote for people for? Isn't this why we have elected officials? It seems not that they're failing us. We're getting together with Brandon later this month and and getting together with Coco's. Not that the police are failing us. We've had Captain Harrison. Am I getting that right? I make sure I get the right title.
Commissioner Harrison.
Right. Make sure I get the right title for everybody because I don't get the titles right. But police and political leaders and what we see on television and the media shapes a lot of this. What happened in Fells Point last month, and I've had some of those business leaders on as well. When you say gangs and truce, boy, as a citizen, I haven't seen The Wire. I haven't had David Simon on yet either. I hope to get David on, my former colleague and co-resident. But when you say gangs and truce and maybe trying to alleviate things at that level, what do you see that I don't know about gangs and what that would entail in getting that to stop?
The subculture is organized just like all culture. And there is leaders and influencers in that culture as well. Now, one of the challenges is that many of the activities we will say is antisocial, but they don't see it that way. They see it as survival. They see it as their opportunity to provide for their families. And unfortunately, crime pays. It pays throughout our society. That's why it's such an ecosystem. There is so much that's derived from the fact that criminal activity has benefits from prisons, from lawyers, from all bail bondsmen and all that. Now, unfortunately, they find themselves being the point of the sphere because they are active and involved. But many times they have accumulated capital. They want to get out. They're aging out. And they want to get out. And so I think we've got to have conversations with them to say to them that here are other options. You know, one, we're not going to condone your criminal activity. We're not even going to excuse your criminal activity. You have to confess your sins. I come from a faith perspective. Say, you got to confess your sins. And then I think that we've got to provide a way after that confession for them to redirect their energy and activity. That's conversation has to happen. There's always been criminal activity. I was just reading.
Aren't these the people at the root of all the unsolved murders, though?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And they, I mean, I'm going to have a gentleman. I'm going to have a live town hall on the 26th. And I have a gentleman in that room who was a hitman. Now, it was his business. Now, he served 37 years for his crimes. But I mean, what is the mindset? We don't understand those mindsets, so we got to have conversation. If we're going to change behavior, we got to understand the mindset.
Well, you're talking about a hitman in 1970 finding a gun and how many guns there were here versus the culture of where we are at this point where and Don, go ahead, Don, you can have at it. I mean, I'll get, you know, guns are 9 out of 10 tweets that anger Don are about guns.
Well, this just 4th of July weekend. There were 100 shootings in the city of Chicago. 100 shootings in the city of Chicago. We know the epidemic of gun violence on the streets of Baltimore. I mean, Rev's heard me say it over and over. We've got to stop pretending that guns aren't part of the problem. And, you know, it's interesting. Professor Larry Gibson wrote an op-ed recently. Got a lot of reaction. You posted it. I posted it, Rev. We both got lit up for posting it. It was like I told Larry recently. We chatted about the op-ed. I said, Larry, it's as if you had posted the Communist Manifesto from Karl Marx and told people we should become a Marxist nation. And basically, what Larry said was, when you look at the national trends, and they're horrific. And
yes,
President Biden is starting to talk about and having to address their horrific trends all over this country.
Unprecedented in the history of humanity.
Yeah, yes, certainly.
This isn't us against how they're doing it in China or Russia or how we used to do it. This is like if they had statistics back during Viking expeditions, you know, in the history of ever, we have nothing but weapons to kill each other.
In Chicago, the police basically put out a statement on 4th of July weekend that they wanted folks to know, don't come down to say we've lost control of the city, that the criminal element had taken control of Chicago, Illinois. Targets and Walmarts and other commercial entities like that have decided to permanently, at least in the short term, change their operating hours and close at 5 o'clock in the evening. This is dramatic all across the country.
Yes.
And what Professor Gibson was saying was not, and he's written now a follow-up op-ed in the Afro saying, look, One homicide's too many. 300 is certainly too many. But given the national trends, if you step back, Baltimore might actually be having some incremental progress. Incremental progress. Not enough, but incremental. That woman that called you, Rev, she doesn't think it's enough.
No,
she lost a nephew who's right. never going to be at Christmas or Thanksgiving again. So it's not enough for her, but we've got to be able to talk about it. We've got to be able to talk about guns. And I'm assuming that Act Now Baltimore is going to talk about guns.
Well, we're going to talk about it, but we got to understand this. Stability and leadership is what he also brought out in that article. That's very significant. I mean, we've had a revolving door of political leaders, a revolving door of police commissioners. I mean, with that kind of chaotic organization from the top, what you expect is going to happen at the bottom. So I think, Gavin, stability and leadership is good. Now, I think now you've got to get total buy-in from the community that there is a real plan. And that's one of the challenges that people in community see. They don't see a plan. It's a micro-processing plan. We're going to go after guns. I mean, come on. How do you stop a manufacturer that's manufacturing guns at an alarming rate? I never forget when Beretta was here, and I went to their factory. How do you stop producing what is legal to produce? They are just used illegally.
And now we're introducing ghost guns. So, like you say, it's not one thing. It's everything. And I always say to folks, we've got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We want, and I think the New York mayoral race,
it showed you something.
Really has people better pay attention. You and I have talked about it, Rev.
Yeah.
That we assume so, and it to me, it's almost like it's one of the most subtly racist right. things that I think we assume that black and brown people don't want police in their neighborhood.
Right.
I don't live in a black or brown neighborhood, but my friends over the years who live in black and brown neighborhoods, they like the police being in their neighborhood. They don't want them to be abusive. They don't want them to be killing people without cause, but they want the bad guys and gals off the street. I mean, am I accurate on that, Rev?
You're accurate. You know, I live in a neighborhood where one of the our residents worked for the police and actually would bring his car home. We were happy to have the car parked there, sitting in the neighborhood,
right.
knowing that he was there. Yes, you want police protection. You want access to police. But you also want to have a criminal justice system that's fair.
Absolutely. And I said, we can do two things at one time. If you're just joining us, one of our favorite guests, Reverend Al Hathaway, Union Baptist Church, amazing work with Act Now Baltimore, and now a real project of love, a passion project. And July the 2nd is now a holiday. It's Thurgood Marshall Day in the state of Maryland. And you've got a Thurgood Marshall project underway that you announced just recently that I know brings a little giddy up to your step. So tell us about Justice Marshall, your involvement, and why you feel so good about what's happening.
You know, one of the things that I would say to Baltimore is that Justice Thurgood Marshall should be to Baltimore as the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King is to Atlanta. He's our native son. And when you think about the civil rights movement, yes, you had the advocacy and the protests, but who was the architect that actually put together the structures and the laws? It was Justice Thurgood Marshall. And I think in many ways, we in Baltimore have not really embraced, have not really trumpeted, have not really recognized the amazing contribution of our native son. And so one of the things that we're going to do is that we're going to restore the elementary school that he attended. He attended there for 8 years. And then the rumor has it that when he would be punished, they would give him a constitution and he'd have to recite and read the U.S. Constitution. Just think about education. This was one of the excellent educational facilities, PS 103 at 1315 Division Street. But more than that, it was designed by George Fredericks. Now, people say, well, who's George Fredericks?
Well, hey, first thing for me, for 13, 15, I got to Google, whoa, where is that? Now, I've lived here a long time. First thing I want to know is where are we going?
That's in Upton in West Baltimore, historic African-American district. It is a school.
13, 15 Division Street. I'm taking a look at right where we are here.
That's right.
So right, Pennsylvania Avenue. I got you. Okay. South of Penn North.
That's right.
Southwest of Bolton Hill.
Oh, man, you got it. You got it. You got it, man. That's going to become the destination place. So I'm glad you got it on your Google map now.
So you're right in the McCullough Homes area then.
Yes. But just think about this. Here was a school built in 1877. So it's one of the oldest schools in the city of Baltimore. And as I said, it was designed by George Frederick. George Frederick designed Baltimore City Hall. George Frederick designed Baltimore City College. George Frederick designed Howard P. Rawlins Laboratory at Drill Park. And there's many structures. So here you have a famous architect who designed this quality building in now what is a historic African-American area. And out of that school, among many people, emerges Justice Thurgood Marshall. Now, if that's not a sign that God can do anything exceedingly above all that we could ask or think, that is it. That a young man right in that neighborhood goes out and becomes the architect of the civil rights movement in Baltimore City from a legal perspective.
Well, I just Googled this, Rev, and Martin Luther King Boulevard is like three blocks away. We got to get a Thurgood Marshall Boulevard or something.
One of the things we're talking about now, one, we've made the push to have this become a state holiday, and you're going to find each year that this will be our Independence Weekend. You start with Justice Thurgood Marshall on the 2nd, then you have the 4th of July celebration. And to think about it, people talk about the Declaration of Independence. Well, it was voted on December the 2nd. It was signed on July the 4th. It was voted on July the 2nd, and then it was signed on July the 4th. So here you have Justice Thurgood Marshall born on the day of the signing of the voting of the Declaration of Independence. I think we've got something to trumpet, something to sell. But more importantly, we're talking to the National Park Service, and they have this under study to make this a asset of the National Park Service. So in Baltimore, we now may have Fort McHenry, which is an asset, and now PS-103, which will be an asset as well.
What will it be in your mind's eye? I mean, I think we've all been to the Babe Ruth Museum. We've all been to a place that was famous from the beginning. If you had $1 billion and could do anything, and obviously the neighborhood has some challenges, you'd want to build something that would also benefit the whole neighborhood. What is the whole beam of light here?
Yeah, one of the things that we want to do is this is not to be a museum. This is to be an activity center. So we have a strategic partnership. My nonprofit, Beloved Community Services Corporation, has a strategic partnership with the University of Maryland College Park. So we're bringing up two of its entities that will be housed in this building. One is going to be which is our lead anchor tenant, is the Judge Alexander Williams Jr. Center for Education, Justice, and Ethics. So we're going to have a whole robust program around education, robust program around legal justice. We're going to have interns there working with residents around their rights, teaching them about
school as a school.
Exactly. We're going to have a whole ethical program. We want to become the place where people in the political arena, in the corporate arena, and in the community get certification in ethics. I mean, that's one of the things we need. We want them to have an ethical certificate that comes from our center. But we're going to do some other things. We're going to remember people. So we're going to remember the work of Justice Thurgood Marshall. There'll be memorial place for him. I was bequeathed the campaign memorabilia of Congressman Elijah Cummings. So we're going to recreate his campaign office there. I have his tapes. I have his piece. So people are going to walk in, and we're going to hear Elijah talking to you when you walk into that room. And then Walter Sondheim, who was a real significant figure in people that don't realize the work of Walter Sondheim with downtown, with GBC, with the Inner Harbor. But Walter Sondheim was also the president of the Baltimore City School Board in 1954. So when the decision came down, he moved to desegregate Baltimore City schools. When you talk about south of the Mason-Dixon line, that was a first. So we want these people to be remembered, but we want them to be opportunities to inspire a new generation that they could do great things as well.
Rev, did you ever spend any time with Thurgood Marshall?
I had an opportunity to meet him on a few occasions because he came to Bournemouth, the convention center, and I was a part of that audience that had a chance to meet him. But I wish he was from a different generation from me, but I have followed him, read him. Professor Larry Gibson, as you know, has written a book, The Young Thurgood Marshall. I've read him, studied him, because I think he is an amazing figure that we need to know. In fact, I read regularly his dissent in the Bakke decision. I think that was one of the most well-crafted arguments that anyone could ever read, his dissent in the Bakke decision.
That was the affirmative action decision?
Exactly.
Right, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he had the minority dissent in that. It was an amazing piece. I read that regularly.
Well, you know, this is an amazing project, but Rev, this is just, I mean, I always say, I don't know when you see, because you do find time to chase the little white ball around
in all of this.
So, but you also own two other properties that are really exciting. It's funny, I reached out to you last week because I had a friend say to me, boy, I hope Reverend Hathaway is involved in the homestead and I guess the law offices of Clarence and Juanita Mitchell. And you said, sure enough, you are, and you've got plans for them as well.
Yes, we do. I think one of the things I want to do, and people know, it's public knowledge that I'm retiring at the end of August.
No, you're not.
Well,
he's going to become a single-digit handicapper.
That's right. So I'm going to move to the side just to allow a younger person to come in place as pastor at Union Baptist Church. I'll still be pastor emeritus. But one of the things I want to do is I want to begin intentionally around restoring historic places. So I do have site control of the law office of Clarence and Juanita Mitchell. That's 1239 Drew Hill Avenue. Amazing things occurred there. I mean, amazing things happened there. They had these big Westminster windows. You walk by, they had pictures of famous people that they interacted with. It was an inspirational place. And then I also have the control of their homestead, their home, which was 1324 Drew Hill Avenue. I have a picture of Mary McLeod Bethune standing on those steps. I have a picture of Eleanor Roosevelt standing on those steps. In the last days of Sister Juanita Mitchell, she was confined to a wheelchair. Her nurse, her in-home stand nurse, was Rosa Parks. So, I mean, this house tells stories, and I'm going to be really proud and excited to deliver this to a new homeowner, but deliver this as a renovated and restored property.
We do a lot around here. We talk to a lot of people and hot shots and elected officials and politicians and wannabes. But I'll tell you what, I think you're like one of the real reasons we created Baltimore Positive, Rev. Come on here and tell a deeper story about what you're doing and work you're doing. I hope we get together soon and get a crab cake. I mean,
we got to get a crab cake, man. This virtual crab cake does not taste as good as the real one.
We'll hook you up with the real thing real soon and keep it in the fairway, Rev.
I had a great day. I was out of Diamond Ridge this morning.
Here we go, Nestor. Here we go.
All tales. Everybody's telling the story.
How did it
out
go
there
this morning out there?
I did quick nine holes, man. I finished the last four, man. I almost birdied, but I finished with four pars.
Did you play the front or the back?
I played the front.
All right, so you almost birdied number nine, did you, on that long par five?
I tell you, I did very, very well. The only thing that happened on my third shot, right, I picked the wrong wedge because I hit the green, and then it bounced into the sand trap right behind it.
A few sand traps around number nine at Diamond Ridge.
Yes, it is.
You golfer guys, all I'm right. Just eating crab cakes and living the dream. You know what I mean? You guys go out there in the sun. I go out in the sun for one reason, to go to the beach. So,
the Reverend can hit the ball, I'll tell you.
We'll
see you on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, and then afterward, we're going to be coming back into the city. I'm going to be reaching out to you to make sure that all these things, we have progress in the next 3-6 months here. But it's always great to visit with you. Thanks for making some time with us.
Man, Nesta, Don, thanks for having me aboard. And please tell the people of our city and people of our region, we have a lot to be excited about. We have a lot that we can do. Come on, let's work together, because together is better.
Oh, absolutely. That's all.
everybody.
Fantastic. Thanks, Rev.
Together
Thank you,
is better. I might steal that. I might call it. We got you Wise got Conversations around here as well. And our friends at Wise Market supporting our friends over in Dundalk at the Heritage Fair last week as well. We've had a heck of a week around here, Don. I must say, as a full wrap up, Don, you and I have had a lot of conversations around here. You're headed to the beach next week, right? I got a little beach later on. It feels like this pandemic, maybe we're through this pandemic, huh?
I hope. I said we're coming out the other side, and it's good people like Reverend Hathaway who are not about to give up, going to make this city a better place to live.
All right, we got we've had festivals and 4th of July from Catonsville to Dundalk. We're going down to G&M to have a crab cake in Anne Arundel County with Stuart Pittman later on in the week. And if you missed it, we were with Barry Glassman, had an unbelievably delicious crab cake at Barrett's on the Pike up in Bel Air last week. So a whole 4th of July here, a hot summer. The Orioles are in last place, but the Bay Sox are hanging in. We got football on the other side. I am Nestor. He is former Baltimore County executive and my high school guidance counselor, Don Moeller, over at Dundalk High. Okay. By the way, Don, I saw Dundalk Elementary. Tell Johnny L. Colgate's coming along. I mean,
it's coming.
We got progress.
It's almost there.
We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.